Are we feeding our kids false facts about science and evolution? One biologist says yes and warns about them in his new book, Zombie Science. That scientist, that biologist, is Dr. Jonathan Wells, who has earned two PhDs, one in molecular and cell biology from the University of California at Berkeley, and one in religious studies at Yale University. Dr. Jonathan Wells is a senior fellow at Discovery Institute. He wrote a classic book, and I think it's one of the best books on the whole subject of creation, evolution, and origins, called The Icons of Evolution. It came out in 2000, the year 2000. In fact, his website, even to this day, is iconsofevolution.com. Now he has a new book, Zombie Science. Dr. Wells, so great to have you back on the program. Thank you so much for joining us on Vocal Point.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jerry.
Okay, great. So tell us about this new book, Zombie Science.
Well, when I published Icons of Evolution in 2000, some critics said that I was stupidly trying to discredit the whole theory of evolution by pointing to a few textbook mistakes, the icons. The icons are images that misrepresent the evidence.
Such as? Just biology. Yeah, why don't you just give a couple of examples?
Sure. One is Darwin's Tree of Life, about how all living things descended from common ancestors. Okay. Another is a series of drawings of vertebrate embryos, supposedly showing that we look like fish in our early development. Those were actually faked. Another one is pictures of peppered moths on tree trunks, supposedly providing evidence for natural selection. And those photos, in most cases, were staged. So the original 10 icons were called by my critics simple textbook mistakes. Well, if that were true, they would have been corrected. But in fact, all of them are still with us 17 years later. Hmm. And that's what zombie science is about. And I infer from that what really matters here is a materialistic creation story, and the icons are the illustrations, and they really have nothing better.
Yeah, and it's interesting, just before we started this broadcast, I was asking you about Ernst Haeckel's embryo drawings. And by the way, in an earlier discussion, I was talking with Dr. Richard Weikart, who wrote the classic book From Darwin to Hitler. And I was pointing out on the air and had him elaborate on this, but Ernst Haeckel is the not-so-missing link between Darwin and Hitler. But tell us about Haeckel and his drawings of embryos. You already mentioned something about the fish.
Yes, well, the drawings include fish, salamander, turtle, bird, and various mammals. And according to the drawings, all of those animals look almost identical in their early stages. And Haeckel and Darwin saw this as evidence that they come from a common ancestor, but the drawings were faked. The early embryos actually look very different.
Hmm.
Haeckel, by the way, is not just a link with Hitler. Haeckel is a link with abortion. Haeckel's drawings were used as evidence that human embryos can be aborted because they're not really human.
Hmm. Okay, now, your book, Icons of Evolution, pointed out in 2000 that, okay, these drawings are faked. I understand that you've actually been able to get some textbook committees to say, well, in this case, we're going to have to reject this particular textbook until they remove Haeckel's embryos. What's the status on that?
Well, you're right. They have been removed from some textbooks, although many biology textbooks still use redrawn versions of Haeckel's drawings to make the same point. But I actually have a textbook from 2013 that has Haeckel's original drawings in it, still making them the same use of them.
But if the textbook publisher, or let's say the textbook committee of a particular state, were to see that and then see your evidence, in fairness to the textbook committee, they pull those textbooks, correct?
Well, some try to. Some succeed. But what usually happens when we try to get the textbooks corrected is the experts, so-called, from the biology establishment come forward and testify that, oh, no, the textbooks are fine. There's no doubt about the theory of evolution. It's the basis of all science and so on and so forth. And they, with their positions and power, usually, all too often at least, sway the textbook committee, and the textbook gets passed anyway.
Do they put any kind of sticker in it saying, oh, by the way, some of the information in this book is questionable?
No, they don't. And actually, if they were to keep some of the icons, but just tell both sides of the story, I would be happy. It's just that they tell one side of the story, and it happens to be false.
Hmm. Well, I remember from your book years ago, the Icons of Evolution book, that one of the icons was Darwin's finches, and that was a real aha moment for me. And the idea there was that, Darwin observed that the finches' beaks would change during drought-like conditions. Their beaks would get stronger so they could crack nuts and get food even when it was harder to do so. But what you pointed out was that when the rains would continue or go back, and those conditions changed, the finches' beaks changed back to normal. So it really could be argued as an argument for design, the creator, as opposed to of evolution. No net change for evolution at the end of the day for the finches. Explain this.
Sure. Well, the finches are on the Galapagos Islands in the Pacific. Actually, Darwin did not notice the beak differences and the adaptations to food sources and so on. That was discovered a century later, actually. They earned the name Darwin's finches, but Darwin actually paid very little attention to them. But the story is, the true story, that during a severe drought in the 1970s, most of the birds with smaller beaks died. And so the survivors had larger beaks, and their offspring had larger beaks, slightly larger. And so there was a shift in the beak size in the population. When the rains came back, the beaks all went back to normal. So Darwin's finches are held up in biology textbooks as an icon of the origin of species by natural selection, when actually the selection was temporary and no new species emerged. And things have actually gotten worse for the story recently, because it turns out that these so-called different species are interbreeding. Well, if they're interbreeding, then why are they being called separate species? It's sort of like dogs, dog breeds. They look very different from each other, but they're all considered one species.
Why do you use the phrase zombie science?
By zombie science, I mean materialistic philosophy masquerading as empirical science, as evidence-based science. So this is the materialistic story that basically uses the icons as illustrations, but they're not really evidence for it. So the story is paramount, and it pretends to be science, and that's what I mean by zombie science.
Hmm. The peppered moths was one of your icons of evolution, and I've always found that very interesting, because in the example, what kind of saved me from evolution, the overall theory of evolution was the idea, well, wait a minute, there are tiny little changes within kind, right? And we can observe those, and if you want to call that microevolution, okay, fine. But what real evolution is, what they're talking about, is extrapolating those tiny little changes and then saying that happens beyond kind. But with the moths, you have a moth in the beginning, a moth in the middle, and a moth at the end. And even there, that's fake. That's crazy. Tell us about the peppered moths.
Sure. Well, with peppered moths, just as with Darwin's finches, no individual organisms changed, but the moths in Britain come in essentially two varieties, a dark one and a light one. And when the tree trunks around industrial cities got darkened by soot during the Industrial Revolution, the dark moths became much more common. And this was interpreted to be a result of birds being able to see the light moths on the tree trunks and eating them preferentially. So they shifted the percentage of black moths in the population. But when the pollution was cleaned up in the 1950s, the proportions went back to the way they were before. So again, there's no net change. And as you say, it's microevolution. It's a minor shift within an existing species. It's not really, you know, the evolution of a new kind of moth, much less something more complex.
But was there some sort of staging of photographs?
Yes. The story started to unravel in the 1980s when biologists discovered that peppered moths don't normally rest on tree trunks in the wild. They're very difficult to find on tree trunks. So the pictures in the textbooks, it turned out, for the most part, had been staged using dead moths pinned to tree trunks.
Oh, my goodness.
And, of course, the students weren't told that.
Yeah. You know, that's really amazing. I mean, there's almost an analogy to me in the sense that for about 50 years, approximately, I'm sorry, 40 years, Piltdown Man, which was turned out to be a deliberate hoax, but it was a human skull with a jaw like an ape. And they were glued together and painted and stained and so forth and discovered in England, I believe it was in England. And anyway, but this Piltdown Man's skull was a major artifact proving evolution, human evolution. And then it turns out, no, it was a deliberate hoax. And yet it was in the books during those 4 decades.
Yes, it was. It was quite a long time before scientists discovered the fake. And the reason it was is because it fit the story.
Yeah.
There was a story that they wanted to tell about humans evolving from ape-like animals, and this particular fake fossil served as an illustration for the story. So that's, again, what I would call zombie science.
Is there any evidence about science that we're not, told about because it just doesn't fit the evolutionary narrative? It's a leading question. I'm sure the answer is yes. There's lots of examples.
Well, there is. There's plenty of evidence against Darwinian evolution, that is macroevolution, the origin of new organs and body plans by unguided natural processes. That's Darwinism. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of evidence against it. That is evidence that the process cannot produce those things. But the students are not told that. Generally, they're told that the evidence for Darwinism is overwhelming, when in fact it's not.
All right, now here's a question from your publicist here. It goes like this. Are there any peer-reviewed science journal articles that challenge Darwin's theory of evolution?
Well, there are plenty of peer-reviewed scientific articles that have evidence against the theory. But typically, in my experience, the article will begin by saying, well, we know evolution is true. Here's some evidence we found, which happens not to fit the theory. And then the article concludes the theory is true. So the evidence is there for someone who wants to go look for it. But to find a statement in an article flat out contradicting the theory is extremely rare, because the scientific establishment has a big stake in keeping this materialistic story alive, even though it's dead.
All right, let me ask you this. When you see that famous lineup of, you know, there's an ape-like creature, then it becomes more human, then more human, and at the end he's walking and it's a regular man, so going from ape to man with 5 or 6 creatures in between, is there evidence for that sequence?
Well, we have fossil evidence of creatures that lived a long time ago that had features, sort of human features and ape-like features. So those are the fossils that are sort of plugged into the story. But we have no evidence that any one of them evolved into any of the others. In fact, in every case, the fossil has features that it would have to lose in order to become the next one in the supposed story. So there's something there. Something obviously happened, but did it happen the way Darwin said it did, by natural selection and random mutation? And the answer to that is the evidence doesn't show it.
Hmm. So would it be safe to say that each of those particular fossils could be classified either as an ancient man or an ancient ape, but not in between?
Well, the people who study them have come up with all kinds of categories, you know, intermediate categories, and they're the ones who place the fossils in those categories. But there's a lot of dispute about it. It seems that every time a new fossil is found, the story gets more complicated and the disputes get more, if anything, acrimonious.
Hmm. All right. Well, we're basically out of time. Again, I want to refer people to your website, iconsofevolution.com, and the name of your new book is Zombie Science. We've been talking with Dr. Jonathan Wells on Vocal Point. Thank you so much, Dr. Wells, for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate it, too.